I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
That is nonsense.
Hello and welcome to Getting My Dad to Say I Love You, the podcast where I talk to other comedians, writers and actors to find out if their parents love them and most importantly, to see if they can help my dad say I love you.
Hello, Christopher.
Are you excited about this new podcast series I'm doing?
I'm a bit sort of apprehensive about it, but let's just see how it goes.
See how it goes. It came about because over lockdown, Dad, I realised that you're incapable of saying the phrase "I love you" to me.
I didn't realise that, but anyway, you say that.
But you do love me, but you don't like being forced into saying it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's quite a difficult thing for people of my generation to do. But just sort of as an aside, or for what it's worth. There's a wonderful photograph of Prince Charles, who, whatever you may think of him, with him and Prince William together, in a very, very sort of loving embrace. And it's quite clear he's probably loves William very much, and it's probably very difficult for him sometimes to say that. And I'm saying for people of my generation, if I'm rambling on, shut me up. But it's quite difficult to say these things. But, you know, I can understand what you're doing. It makes sense.
To people who don't know my dad, what I love about that is I asked you quite a direct question and you've managed to make it about the royal family at the start.
Well,
the
I didn't
guys, if you like the monarchy, this is the podcast for you. But I get your point. He is showing it in his generation's way, which is your generation, because, I don't know, did your parents say I love you directly to you?
I don't remember that particularly.
Yeah, because it wasn't the done thing.
It wasn't the way that things manifested themselves. They could clearly love me, yes, of course. They were very keen, yes.
But the thing is, Dad, if you just said it a couple more times, I wouldn't do this for a living. I'd have a nice really? Normal job where I wouldn't need to gain affection and validation from others. But Dad, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go and interview my friend Ramesh Ranganathan and hear about his family, and also to get him to give you some tips to help you say I love you to me. Does that sound good?
Sounds a positive way forward.
How you doing, Ramesh?
I'm very good, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. With this podcast, I like to crack straight into it and just ask my guests out the gate, have both your parents said I love you to you before?
Oh, shit. My mum has a lot. Yeah. I'm trying to think if my dad did. Yes, I'm pretty sure he did.
He did.
I don't. It's not burning a hole in my... in my psyche that he didn't say that, so I'm assuming he did, but yeah. I can't remember him saying it, but I'm sure
of course did. Well, I think with dads it's harder anyway, and obviously you know, your dad's no longer with us, so that's harder to check. But like, I do think it's it came about this because I was very certain that my parents don't like to express emotion, really, neither of them. And I was thinking, they do. I obviously know they do, but I've never heard them say it. But I understand from their generation, it's quite a, it's not a done thing. Like, you're a dad, you've got kids. I'm sure you say I love you to them all the time.
I do, yeah. I would say that I say it to their detriment. You know, like they don't want to hear it. And also, I've done the other thing of, because my dad used to embarrass me a lot. Like dropping me off at school in particular, You know, he would turn up. I remember once he turned up in denim hot pants. Another time he turned up in wearing...
Sorry. Go back. You can't add that to a list of many things. And not to, your dad turned up to pick you up from school in denim hot pants.
So he wanted to... He was doing the gardening once.
You said it like it was a standard dad move, that.
Yeah, you know, the old... You know, the denim hot pants move. You know what I'm talking about. No, he was doing the gardening once and didn't have any shorts. And so he cut off a pair of jeans, but he cut them off so short that the pockets were lower than the bottom of the legs, like they were super short. So he wore those to do the gardening, and I remember saying, like, that's so embarrassing. And so then, specifically because I said that was embarrassing, he came to pick me up from school wearing those shorts. Do you know what I mean?
That's excellent dad behaviour. And what else that you had more on the list you were going into there?
Oh yeah, well the other thing he would do is just he'd sort of test how angry I'd get. Like I remember getting a pair of Jordans, and I was really protective about them because like, they were the most expensive trainers I'd ever owned. And he came to school wearing them to pick me up wearing them.
That's like amazing.
Such a dick move. Do you know what I mean? But he just wanted to see my face.
That feels like brother territory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the way
he
was with you. Was he a young dad?
I guess not for Sri Lankan parents he wasn't. But you know, Sri Lankan parents, they like to Asian people like to reproduce early. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's fairly regular age. But he was like my dad was going through that thing of you know, he'd moved over to England from Sri Lanka when he was very young, like 19, 20 years old. And he just loved Western life. He just loved being in the UK. He loved that sort of... My dad was a proper, like, loved pub culture, loved football, loved cricket. You know, like, he properly threw himself into all of that. And I think he sort of was discovering his kind of inner lad as my brother and I were growing up. So he was just like a really funny outgoing bloke. But I think I sometimes feel like I suffer from that a little bit, where that line between being a parent and being matey with your kids, it's a difficult line to walk, I think. And I think it's a challenge for everyone. The way that he used to embarrass me at school is something that I've definitely passed. I've learned from, and I do that to my kids. I do a lot of really loud "I love yous" as they're going into school.
They hate that now, but they won't make a podcast about you not saying it 20 years later. So maybe it's a short term pain for long term gain. You said a funny thing though that made me think of different parents and how they are. My dad is embarrassing, but not, he's not like intentional. He's just who he is. And I would get embarrassed by him as a kid because he's very outgoing and he's similar. Sounds like a bit like your dad was like, just like to be entertaining and have a good time. Mm. But like, he would just often get, he'd be the dad who my mates would go, "Oh, your dad's a legend." And I'd be like, yeah, he's kind of very fun from afar. But like in terms of hands-on parenting, he leaves a little bit to be desired. But I wonder if, you kind of like made that thing on treading the line between being a mate and a parent always made me think of the kids when I was growing up who would quite easily talk to their parents about girls and kissing and sex, and those dads who wanted to like be part of it. And my dad is so the opposite of that. And that always was your dad. You talked to your dad about like dating and that sort of thing.
Well, listen, I'm sure my dad would have happily talked to me about that. Sadly, because of the type of kid I was, it never really came up.
Oh,
no. Like, we didn't, you know.
I texted you before. Was on a podcast? I said, "Well, it's not a podcast where I want you to cry, but I didn't think it would be about how bad you were at getting off of people."
No, do you know? Well, do you know, the thing was, is my parents said, my mum told me that I wasn't allowed to see any girls until I finished university.
So really?
That was.
That's I only know your mum from watching her on TV, and she seems so like such a laugh that I can't, that's funny. Did she mean that seriously?
Well, I think she realised at the time that it was a ridiculous thing to demand, but at the same time she would have loved it if we'd have adhered to it. Do you know what I mean? She was just so convinced that as soon as we started getting into girls and stuff, we'd stop trying to strive to achieve her dreams of us becoming doctors. Do you know what I mean? So it's like she didn't want us to get distracted by that. Whereas my dad didn't really, he didn't really give a shit about that. So, you know, he was just sort of do what you want to do. He was, and then also I was just kind of not very, I just wasn't very good at talking to girls and stuff. But I reckon my dad would have, he was pretty open to talking about everything. Do you know what I mean? He was a more chilled out parent of the two, I would say.
Your mum was much more disciplinarian.
I think so, but the other thing you got to bear in mind is my dad just wasn't around a lot. Do you know what I mean? And so he was often working away, and he you know, he used to go.
What did your dad do? Out of interest,
well, he did a number of different things, but I mean, it all centered around him being an accountant, and he did that for various different companies. But
right.
He also got drunk a lot after. Like, he'd go out after work
this
all
is,
the time.
This is a common through. This is my dad. Yeah. Worked all day, socialised all night.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you feel like you're kind of... someone pointed this out in another episode, was like, this might be putting words into your mouth or into your mind that you haven't thought of, but you're kind of... What we do now for a living is essentially... We can dress up as you want. It is attention seeking.
Right? Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's the ultimate narcissism, but it is attention seeking. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the narcissism, I think, makes it too self-centered, where I think actually it's more, I don't know, I feel like, you know, it sounds like you had a laugh with your dad as well, but him not being around really resonates, and that you're just trying to do something to be like, hey, I'm here. Ditch the other stuff. And
yeah
that's a, but obviously you weren't when you were like a teenager thinking I'm going to be a comedian, but you kind of like, that might have been somewhere in your subconscious.
Well, I think, maybe. I mean, look, I did my first comedy gig when I was 9 at Pontins Holiday Camp. So it was in my, I guess it was in the grand scheme of, it was going to happen, or I was thinking.
How did it go?
It.
You must have talked about this on something else, but how did
I won the talent competition. Okay. So, okay. I don't want to go on about it. I sort of rode that wave ever since. But, yeah. But I think like, look, it's tricky, man, because my mum and dad had such a sort of stormy relationship, because my dad was, my dad drank a lot. He was a proper party animal. I think he found living in England to be like a bit of a sensory overload. Do you know what I mean? He was always out on the smash, and like, he slept around with other women quite a lot and stuff. And my memories of my mum and dad, like when we were growing up, was sort of lots of happy times where we'd be together as a family, we'd go on holiday together. Mm. And there was a lot of them just shouting at each other, you know? Yeah. And so you sort of, yeah, just my dad was like, you sort of end up really, it's really sad, isn't it? The parent that's around a lot, you'd take for granted. And, you know, 100%. And so I remember just really craving attention from my dad and really wanting to impress my dad. And my mum was just fucking there the whole time. And they're just like, yeah, mum, I get it. Dad, you know, it's really shit. And that's why I'm absent so much now, because I figured out that's how it works. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, let my wife do a lot of the legwork. And then,
it's funny. Each one of these I do, you keep saying something, people keep saying a thing that sounds the same, and then you just add a little bit more information. So what you're saying there was chatting to Tiff about this, Tiff Stevenson, and I said it reminded me of a lot of me sitting on stairs hearing them argue and then feeling powerless. Does that kind of relate, where you're like, you want to help, but you're like 8, so what are you gonna do? You're gonna, hey guys, have you just thought about compromising? Like, they're like, shut the fuck up, you're 8, you know what you're on about. But you said oh shit, you said something else. I've just lost my train of thought. But yeah, that idea, no, that was it. Taking your mother for granted. I think that's such a, I honestly used to think my, just weird shit, just like, this is the most spoiled sounding thing. She used to make me make my own sandwiches and breakfast from like the age of 8.
Right. And I think that's excellent.
It's so good though. There was a kid,
it's great. It's
Pete
so
Krias
great.
At my school was getting sandwiches made at 18. And now, you know, I'm sure that guy can't even wipe his
own
ass.
Look at that guy. Yeah, what happens to him if he needs to make a sandwich in an emergency?
I'm sure he just still calls his mum and she does it for him. But I used to take her for granted because she was around all the time, and used to think she was the nag. But now I've got older, I have had this moment of clarity. Like, oh, you're like really good at being a parent. And dad, you were fun and I wanted your attention, but actually, you know, you should have upped your game a little bit more.
Mate, you're totally describing Listen, I love my dad, and like we had a great relationship by the time he passed away. But like my, you know, when I think about, I remember like watching my mum and dad argue, and the dynamic of it to me was my mum shouting at my dad, and my dad just going, "Look, just chill out," right? So to my mind, as a kid, I'm just like, "Why the fuck is mum? Why is mum being so horrible to dad?"
100%.
Now I realise that my dad was a complete shit to my mum. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and she, and actually, this is just a woman just desperately trying to get some fucking respect in a horrendous kind of situation, and so. I remember like sort of siding with my dad, and I did never do this, but part of me would like want to go to him and go, "God, what's her fucking problem, man? Why doesn't she just chill out, dad? Am I right? Why is she giving you so much of a hard time?" Whereas now I think back to it and I'm just like, fucking hell, dad, you were like, you're properly, listen, he was a human and people are flawed. And like, you have to have that. You have to have that understanding. But in terms of like, who was in the right in those arguments? Now I realise that my poor mum was going through the fucking shit. Do you know what I mean? So
I know.
It's so interesting, man.
I realise a phrase my dad said all the time, and it's funny how these little phrases, they stick with you, and that probably reinforces that idea of like backing him. And also just, I think, do you have a sister? Or is it just you and your brother?
No,
I met your brother before.
Yeah.
He actually came to one of my gigs on a stag do and brought a stag do above a pub, and it was bad.
What a prick. What an absolute prick.
But my dad used to do just anything he would do, he would say to me, "Whatever you do, don't you dare tell your mother." And I'd be like, "Yeah, we won't tell her." And now I'm old, I'm like, why didn't you tell her? That's so, imagine if I was like, he basically like got like a fucking, all kind of a skip rat to like work on his behalf to do his like shape, like going out on the piss and like gambling and stuff. And then like, so I've got a 10-year-old to back me up here. It's like, what?
You just feel cool and you feel like, you feel like you're with your dad against this authority figure or whatever. It's totally understandable, but real dick move by your dad. I mean, listen, you know, it's...
No. All caveated with the guy, awesome in many ways, but funny that when you were younger, you think, this guy's so cool. And then you're
my dad was proper life and soul. Do you know what I mean? Like, we'd go, like, there's a big Sri Lankan community in London and in Crawley where we lived, and like they'd go to parties and stuff, and my recollections of my dad were like my dad like holding court and people laughing at him and him being on the like drinking and like telling stories, ripping the shit out of people. Do you know what I mean? Just all of that. But my mum's memory of that is her sitting quietly while my dad flirted with everyone. Do you know what I mean? Just ignored her for the whole evening and stuff like that. And so, but I remember growing up just thinking, my dad's a legend. Like, what a hilarious, amazing, funny bloke. Do you know what I mean? So, and listen, he was those things. But, you know, as I got older, I realised there's some context to all of that, you know.
Because I think it's interesting when parents, certain people, I'm going to do what my dad and pass it on. But a lot of it, I think, is looking at what they did and trying to not do what they did. As you are now a parent to some children, you must be, like you said, you say I love yous a lot more. You're obviously away working, but do you find yourself forcing yourself to, like, I don't know, I find myself completely adverse to any argument or secrets with Hannah. I have no kids, but so, and I think that's like, I saw what he did and wanted, as I got older, to do the opposite. So what I want you to do is on a podcast admit, like, you're going to go, "Yeah, mate, I keep loads of secrets from all."
No, but I totally relate, mate. I mean, I totally relate to what you're saying. It's like, I saw what my dad did to my mum. And, you know, there's a point at which my dad, for a long time, was trying to leave us as a family and go and set up a life with another woman. And I saw what that did to my mum, and he didn't do it in a way of like, he didn't do, you know, because people split up. I totally understand that. And you know, if my mum and dad divorced, you know, kids find that tough, but it's the right thing to do. You know, if people aren't supposed to be together, the way my dad went about it was horrendous. And so I sort of saw that, and I saw the way that my mum and dad were, and you do find yourself going, I want to be the opposite of that. Do you know what I mean? I remember thinking to myself, I absolutely am not going to treat my wife like that, and I'm not going to treat my kids like that, and I'm not going to make my kids feel like that. And then later on, I've realised that there were things that my dad did that were actually great as a parent. Mm-hmm. And it took a little bit of time for me to appreciate that. So I went from hero worshipping him to thinking he was like awful to sort of falling somewhere in between and realizing that, realizing I think what the reality of the situation was. But
yeah, he's just a like every human has flaws, and you can pick certain things that you want to be like. And
I was going to say, like, the moment I remember the moment that you have moments where you go, oh, my parents are just people. I remember my mum being absolutely losing her shit with me, right? Because I was a difficult kid. And she was like chasing me around my bedroom to bollock me when I was a little kid. And she tripped over one of my toys. She was telling me to clean my room. She tripped over one of my toys and fell over. And I remember in my head thinking, oh my God, she can fall over. It felt like such a, do you know what I mean? I know it sounds so mad. I just didn't think she could fall over because she was my mum. Do you know what I mean?
I relate to that massively. My mum, especially because I'm away a lot, because obviously I live in a different country. And when I remember one, and I love them and I like to be near them, but I also wanted my independence. But I remember when I moved out, she was just walking out. She told me she walked down the street and tripped and fell. And then I was like, and then she had an injury on her face. And you're like, oh God, it just makes you feel, oh, there's something about that. It's like, no matter how much it's a good like reminder, no matter how annoyed or like frustrated of parents, maybe once a year they should just fall over, manufacture it just to remind their kids that they're vulnerable and you love them and care about them. Or my dad, I remember when I was, you've made me have this memory, I hadn't had for ages. He got the shit kicked out. He got mugged when I was about 7. And I remember seeing him, two massive black eyes, like his face was fucked and he was drunk. And I remember thinking like, whoever did that was an arsehole. And like, yeah, that's bang out of order. And the way he described it was these random people just did it. But having been with my dad on public transport when he's been hammered, I'm like, I think he probably annoyed some people there by just not thinking of others. And I'm not saying he deserved it, wasn't there? I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying it's that funny thing with time and a bit more hindsight. You're like, oh, maybe. But yeah, that when I was a kid, I was like, oh, my dad's got two black eyes and like he's not immortal. It's terrible.
Horrible. Horrible, man. Horrible.
So do you need to fall over once a year around your kids to keep them excited by you as a dad?
I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, but I've been pretty open with my kids about my flaws as a parent. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes I have got things wrong and I have told them and sort of apologized to them. I remember a few times I've told my kids off and sort of realized later on that I got it wrong. And I've just said to my son, I remember having a conversation with my oldest son recently, just going, look, I'm really sorry. I thought I'd got it right, but now thinking about it, I was probably a bit harsh on you. And it sort of explained, and I said, I sort of put it across from my point of view. I said, this is why I did what I did, but I realised now I was wrong. And I thought that was a good thing to do. My wife's sort of a bit like that as well. But one of my friends said to me, you've absolutely fucked it. You've shown yourself to be fallible. And now nothing you say going forward is worth listening to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess do you want them to, like, it's a bit like Santa, right? You want them to work it out themselves at some point. And then
I think rather than showing them, listen, mate, I haven't got, I'm clueless. I mean, I don't know how you're going to turn out. Do you know what I
mean? I'm completely winging this and it's a miracle you're still alive. And then they're like, all right.
Yeah. So you just sort of, all I would say is I don't think there's an issue for my kids thinking I'm fallible. I think they've got it.
They know you're very fallible.
They've accepted that. They're not going to be on a podcast in the future going, and then I realised that my dad was just human. I don't think they're going to have moment.
They're like, this low confidence idiot told us once a week that he was completely blagging.
We actually stopped listening to what he was telling us off because we knew that in about half an hour he'd come up and apologise.
Come back, tail between leg. Oh God, what a beater dad we have.
Yeah. What did you fuck up this time, Dad? Come on.
Yeah, go on, Dad. Should we just cut the next hour of our lives? Just cut to you admitting what a moron you are.
Come here, son. How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Well, let's pivot a bit more towards your mum here, because I'm just guessing this from what you kind of said, but I think the big common through line with, I think as a comedian especially, you just turn up and you do this and you don't do any work. I mean, obviously it's harder with you because you are, from the outside, the hardest working man in comedy, because the fact I got you for this podcast is a miracle. And yeah. I appreciate you giving me time because you're always doing stuff. So that work ethic, is that, because your dad sounds like the entertainer and the one holding court, and your mum wanting you to not speak to a girl till you were 21. I might have exaggerated that, but like, that there must be, she wanted you, like, are you half joking? But I think to have a proper disciplined job, is there that kind of discipline? Is that a thing that you think is just been handed down by your mum or both? Or
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, the truth is my mum never, I mean, my mum's very, very supportive and has always been very supportive of my career and whatever I've chosen to do. But I don't think if you'd have asked her when I was a kid, if you'd asked her if she wanted me to be a comedian, she would have said yes. I mean, she wanted me to follow like a tradition. When she said, I want you to work hard, it's in a very traditionally academic way. You know, my mum had a very set, a very sort of rigid set of things that she thought what success was defined by, you know, and that meant becoming a doctor or working in finance or becoming a lawyer or whatever, and you go and get your nice house and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's actually what happened to me. You know, my dad's sort of, in a nutshell, kind of, we found out that my dad was like trying to leave the family and see this other woman. My dad ended up going to prison and our lives were sort of turned upside down. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what ended up, you know, not just because of the sort of formative nature of that kind of upbringing, but also the fact that I sort of realized that chasing like, my dad struggled throughout his whole life. He struggled to do that thing that my mum wanted me to do, and he wasn't really happy. He was kind of constantly kicking against it. He was constantly kicking against being married. He's constantly kicking against being trapped by a 9-to-5 job. You know, he ended his life sort of, at the end of his life, he was running a pub, and, you know, he really loved doing that. But I think he found that really late on, doing something he really loved. So actually, I think all of those things kind of made me decide that I wanted to do that. I was happy to follow a more unorthodox path, which being a comedian is. You know, I don't think had I not been through, or had we not been through that, I don't think I would have followed this path. But the other thing is, in regards to, you're talking about work ethic, my mum and dad were on a very comfortable path, very comfortable trajectory, and then over the course of 6 months, everything got turned upside down and everything went away. And I think that hardwired me with a fear of that happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is never, I don't, you know, as grateful as I am for where I am in my job, and I love my job, and I can't believe that I get to pay the bills doing what I do. I really do feel lucky and blessed. I never feel like I've made it. I always feel like I could get a tap on the shoulder tomorrow. I could get a phone call just going, Rom, everyone's found out that actually you're shit at this. So everything's gone. You know what I mean? So I think it's that fear. Cause like my parents, like my dad, like, you know, we got the house repossessed. We ended up living in a bed and breakfast for like a year. And then when I first became a comedian, my dad passed away. And so then because I couldn't focus on work as much, me and Lisa and I sort of went broke for a while. And so I've had two experiences of things going to shit very, very quickly.
Right.
And so I think that kind of makes you feel like, fuck, I need to keep working. And also, you know, I have what you and I both have, and what all decent people have, which is crippling imposter syndrome. Do you know what I mean? And so, that has its part to play. Do you know what I mean? So
I joked with you when I texted you about doing this, and you said, I said, mate, do you want to do this podcast? And you went, sorry, who is this? And then I was like, and then you were like, no, so I know it's you. And I was like, don't even, because I already felt really vulnerable for asking a favor. Because essentially, anyone listening, if you're getting a friend to be a guest on a podcast, it's, you know, they're taking, this isn't going to make or break Romesh's career, but it's very sweet of you to come on. So I was like already a bit like anxious. And you said that. And I was like, don't even joke about that, mate. I already feel like a fraud that I texted you. So yeah, no, you're right. That is a big commonality between all of us, I think.
And
then you add, I think if you're right, if you've had those two moments where stuff suddenly goes to shit, of course you're going to, you know, you're worried the president of comedy is going to come and revoke your license and stop you. Yeah, yeah. But that's, I think it's a fine line, isn't it? Because it's good to have that to keep you working. But then also, do you find it, do you struggle to just enjoy, like, do you give yourself time to enjoy it?
Yeah, well, do you know what? To be honest with you, it's something I've come to, I guess, relatively recently, you know, because you're right. What's the point of doing all this if you're not going to enjoy it? And mm-hmm. so, like, and also, you know, the truth is, mate, I sort of was like reading up about this and thinking about it. I've thought about this quite a lot, really, and you know, this sort of imposter syndrome of working. And, you know, I remember talking to Sean Walsh about whether you ever have a moment where you go, I've done what I was supposed to do. You know what? I don't know what I was supposed to do. You know, cool. I'm happy. Do you know what I mean?
So just to jump in there, you've made me remember, have you had this before where I've done some stuff in my career that I was like, I really want, and the moment I've done it, I'm already on to, I have to be better at, like, remember I got to do a live at a comedy store or whatever. And when I was a teenager, I used to watch that show and I'd be like, that'd be a dream. The moment I did it, I was like, well, what's next? I just couldn't. And that's a kind of thing. I wish I could just be in the moment more and enjoy it.
100%, man. It's like, you know, if you'd have said to either of us at the beginning of our starting out to do this, you're going to end up at where we are, we'd both have taken that and been delighted, right? But the truth is, every time you get something, you know, this idea that once you get this thing, you're going to be happy, it's just bullshit. Do you know what I mean? And I just think that happiness comes from elsewhere, you know? And so now I feel like, I genuinely feel like, you know, I mean, don't test me on this, but I genuinely feel like if it happened for a third time that all of my career went away and I'd be all right with it, you know, because I sort of realised that my career is not the be all and end all of me. Do you know what I mean?
And you've invested a lot of money in cryptocurrency.
Listen, I'm bulletproof. Do you know what I mean? I bought enough property now that I'm insulated from this.
You're a slum landlord. You're fine.
Yeah. But no, but the truth is, it's that kind of thing of like, you know, what, you can't make your career your, you can't be defined by it. Do you know what I mean? It's a great thing that, listen, I feel so lucky that I do comedy. I love it. And the fact that that's what I pay my bills with, honestly, I feel so lucky. But that's not where my happiness comes from. Do you know what I mean? I'm happy when I go to work, but my happiness comes from, like, oh God, I sound like a fucking Hallmark.
Say it, mate. Really. You're fine.
But it just, you know, it's like relationships, friends and you know, all that stuff. And so, yeah, I sort of feel that eases the pressure a little bit. But I still have this thing where The second I complete doing something, I think it's crap, or I think about all the things I did badly. You know, as soon as I come off this podcast, I think, oh my God, you shouldn't have said that. And that was awful. You're so boring. You know, I'll go and do a thing and I pour myself into it 100%. You know, you do a set on a comedy set on a show or something and you think, okay, that was great. You buzz for about half an hour. And then after that, you just say, oh, that delivery on that was terrible.
Watching or listening back to yourself is just like, you're like, why the fuck would anyone even smile at what I was saying there?
Sometimes when you're working up a tour show or whatever, working up material, and you record it and you listen to it back, and there'll be moments where I say something, a bit of new material, and it gets a laugh. So I laugh because I'm excited in the moment. I listen back to it and I sicken myself. It's not that funny, you smug prick. Do you know what I mean? What are you so pleased with yourself for? You absolutely fumbled the delivery on that, you twat. Do you know what I mean? You can't help it, man. It's
like, there are some comics though. In America I've noticed a bit more. There's some people that are like, who's so confident, and maybe it's a complete app, but I think some of them are like, this is like, you know, those people who, and you know, some of these comedians, okay, they'll be chatting to you backstage and they will just holding court is one thing, but just telling you the longest, if I'm selling a story that's more than about 12 seconds, I'm already like, what am I doing? Why am I saying this to these people? Why are they all looking at me? But there are some people who will just talk for an hour. It'll be meander, and they don't care. I don't know what that is. It's someone not inside me, but I'm kind of jealous.
That self-belief, you know, that sort of just inherent kind of, I am good at this and blah, blah, blah. I have moments of it occasionally, but it doesn't sit with me all the time. But the other thing is, like, you know, it's interesting you talk about Americans. Like, I was over there doing a show like a few years ago.
Oh, can I just say on that, before I forget to say this funny story about you... Because I didn't see you, but Hannah was driving through LA and she was like, I saw Romesh on the back of a truck shouting out of a megaphone to get people to come watch his show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that made me feel good about myself. No, Romesh isn't doing as well.
Yeah, mate.
That was to try and sell a show out here, because it's so hard to sell shows out here.
Yeah, we sort of did a comedy doc thing about me trying to sell out this show. And that was one of the ideas that we had to try and sell the show, and it didn't work. But I remember doing a gig. I think you may have recommended Hermosa Comedy and Magic, because you were playing it a lot, I think. And so I was doing a gig there, and the other comic said to me, what are you doing out here? And I said, I'm doing this like doc thing on trying to sell like this show. And they went, oh my God, that's amazing. And I said, oh mate, it's going to be, I just got lucky and got this thing. I mean, it probably won't be all that. And then they just stopped talking, right? And like one of them just went, you should not talk about yourself like that. You're doing this thing. It's great. We just watched your set. You do not talk. Like, they sort of staged an intervention then. And I was like, and I was doing that thing that British people do, of being slightly embarrassed of anything. You sort of almost apologise for creating content, don't you? I've done this thing. I'm so sorry. Don't make direct eye contact with me, but it's there if you want it. I was doing that. In a British green room, everybody would have gone, yeah, probably will be shit, mate. See you later, take care, or whatever. Yeah. Like, so, but in America, they just don't. Yeah. I mean, I'm basing America on this sample size people in a green room.
You're right. We were chatting to someone the other day and Hannah said about some new show we're trying to write or something. And she went, that's the idea. She goes, it's a bit silly. And then the guy went, don't say it's silly. Don't say it's silly. And we're like, the tone is silly. Because as soon as he heard silly, he was like, why are you telling a silly idea to an adult? It's making it sound crap. Yeah. I was like, all right. So now I tell her off whenever she says something silly. Now I've turned into that. I go, remember in America, nothing's silly. It's all the best thing they've ever heard in their fucking lives, mate.
Well, because the thing is, if every meeting they have is somebody telling it's the best thing ever, and then somebody comes in and doesn't say it's the best thing ever, it's obviously the shittest thing ever. I mean, that's the assumption, isn't it? That's a natural assumption.
Yeah. Everyone knocks. Just to bring it back to your mum then. So your mum obviously is, it's funny that you said she was a disciplinarian and then kind of wanted to have these real jobs. Because my mum was similar, but then I noticed the point when she was like, "You're doing this comedy thing. What's a bit stupid? Like, what are you doing?" Then I told her I was making some money from it, and she was like, "Oh, okay." But obviously, your mum is part of, you know, you've done amazing TV shows, and she seems to embrace it now. Was there a point you remember where she went from like, "Are you going to be a doctor?" to like, "Oh, this is all right."
Well, I sort of had a bit of a. I remember us having a chat about this because. When I first, because I was a maths teacher before I went into comedy, and like in the Asian community, being a teacher is like one of the most revered jobs that you can have, right? And a maths teacher is like, you know, you're educating the young, you know, in Asian culture, that's as it should be in all cultures, really. But, you know, it turns out teachers aren't as well respected in some countries as they are in others.
Yeah.
But so I was doing that. I mean, and, you know, I remember my mum telling me that all of her friends couldn't believe that I'd left that job to become a comedian. You know, they were so, like, but they were saying to my mom, "Oh my God, how do you, are you okay? You know, like, it's just, she's had a bereavement. You know, is it all right that your son's gone into comedy or whatever?"
And just to delve into that a bit more, what point of, you're doing two at the same time. I think if we first did a gig at Ipswich University.
Yes, yeah, I remember.
You were still a teacher. And I'm not just saying this because you're here. I do remember watching you and going, "Ah, he's way too good for how new he's supposed to be." I was like, "Well, I was like, why are you?" I was like, "He's so good," and I was so there.
Cheers! I remember you being really nice.
I'll take ownership of your success, though.
No, but I remember you being really.
But you were doing both at the same time. So what was? So this is your mum probably didn't mind you doing both at the same. Did you tell her straight away when you're doing comedy? You kind of let it. You started.
No, I told her. I told her straight away, and she didn't mind me doing both at the same time. It's when I decided to leave that it was a big issue, you know, because then it stops being a hobby, and it, you know, and she was really worried about it. But the reason that we kind of had a little bit of a disagreement is my mum only really started fully. She was supportive. I don't want to give the wrong impression. She's fully supportive of my comedy career. She only really started to see it as a success is when I started doing television, right? And like, because
Famous. We've spoken about it before. It's mum famous. It's different to other famous. Yeah.
And so what would happen is her friends at work would come up to her and go, "I saw Ramesh on this thing." And then suddenly she was getting boosted by her colleagues and stuff. And the community were like, "Oh my God, I didn't think your son was going to make a success of this. And he has done and blah, blah, blah." And so my mum said to me, "You know, all of my friends were saying to me, you weren't going to do anything. And now they saw you on Mock the Week and all this and blah, blah." And I remember saying to her, "Mum, you know, like if I would been making a living doing the clubs or the circuit or whatever and not doing TV, that's still me making a success of this, right? Like that's still good. That's still really good." But it's because like my mum had it so tied into what the community think about it. And you know, and so when I started doing TV, she started becoming, this is before she started doing TV shows with me, she started getting a little bit of sort of reflected glory from Asian people that she worked with and stuff like that, just going, "Oh my God, your son was on television," and like she was like enjoying that. And I'm making it sound like, it makes it sound like she's a bit shallow. It's not that at all. It's like, think about it from my mum's point of view, we were living in a bed and breakfast for like a year and a half, right? And we were in council accommodation. I know loads of people in council accommodation, but my mum's life got turned upside down. We were concerned, like rock bottom. And then her son's on TV. Like my mum now will say to me, she can't quite believe, you know, she can't believe it, because then all she saw was just despair. You know, she just saw, how are we ever going to get, you know, all of her friends stopped talking to her when we were like, when the house got repossessed, like everybody sort of stopped getting in touch with a bar, a few people. And so to my mum, we were like, this is completely messed up. So now she just can't quite believe it. Do you know what I mean?
Do you then, because, you know, this is kind of what sparked this, is like, I didn't realize it till I was out here, but like, you know, me and Hans had some good news recently that about something that I can't talk about. But I remember I was like, when is the earliest I can tell my mum and dad about this? And it's not even for them to be like, "Oh my God, that you're amazing." It's for them to be like, "You're not fucking your life." Like that's all, that's like, that's the level. So do you, and obviously you have to tell your mum when you are doing a show on TV and she's in it, she has to get told. But do you, it'd be very weird to just spring that on her. Like, "I'm just going to film you for 4 weeks without giving you a heads up." But do you, and actually then if it's all right, talking about your dad, you said, well, you just started comedy before he passed away, did you say?
My dad passed away 3 days before I went full time as a comedian.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
So he'd seen me do, and actually he was like super supportive. He'd like come to loads of gigs and stuff. He's pretty honest with the feedback. I remember doing a gig with a comic, Jeff Innocent, at Comedia in Brighton, and I think I was on in the middle.
Jeff's great, by the way.
He's an amazing comic. And my dad came off, like after I came off, I was like buzzing because the gig had got, to my mind, the gig had gone well. And then my dad just said to me, if you really want to do this, you got to get as good as that guy because he was better than you tonight. And like, that's hard to hear, but actually that's the right, you know.
You need to hear that.
You need to hear that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was the right thing. It was like, it was a fucking buzzkill, I'll be honest with you, on the night. But yeah. You know, he goes to me, you did well, but like, you know, he was just sort of very honest. But yeah, when I decided to go full time, I remember, my dad passed away. And my mum and I kind of joke about this because, like, I don't know what my dad would have been. Like, my dad was such a hedonist, man. Like, I don't know what he would have been like, you know, dining out on. I mean, like my mum said that if my dad was alive, there's no way she would have been in any TV shows with me. It would have been
He would have wanted
Asian,
to be in there.
Asian provocateur would have been me and my dad travelling around Sri Lanka. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, it's a weird. I remember him. Actually, this story involves you. Actually, I remember like, do you remember when we went and did the workshops for Show Me the Funny, the TV show, and we were trying out for that, and that's the closest my dad came to seeing me get on television when I was in the running for that. And I remember it really, like, he was so desperate for me to get on that show. And I remember, like, when I didn't end up doing that show, he was...
Did you get offered it as well?
I did. I think I did, yeah. But I think so. But I think I was teaching at that time. And, like, I remember thinking, this ain't the right time for me to do this show. Yeah. Really. Do you know what I mean?
I remember thinking, I think it was... It was an interesting lesson. I didn't do it, but I actually remember someone told me, who's a bit further ahead, another comedian, Canadian guy, he's just like, just say yes to everything. Because at the time, I think you're so worried. And that's, again, it's like a confidence. I think I was like, oh, if I go on there, I'll do the wrong thing. But actually, you forget. I think maybe back in the day when it was like two TV shows, you had now it's like there's so much stuff you could go on and do it. But yeah,
Yeah.
I made that about me rather than you. Sorry.
My dad didn't really see, he didn't see me really get anywhere with comedy. Do you know what I mean?
You'd only done it a couple of years. So like,
true. But my dad was like, you know, parents haven't got realistic expectations for what you should be doing. I remember like 6 months in and my dad asking me why I hadn't done Live at the Apollo.
Of course.
And I had to say to him, it's because they very rarely book people who've only got 4.5 minutes of material that works. You know, so it's like, you know, they've got a certain quality threshold that needs to maintain.
I know. Well, I'm sure he's, he was very proud though. He was just doing it in that dad way of like, he had to, that's a classic dad thing of like, oh, why aren't you doing this? But he's secretly thinking, it's fucking amazing you're doing this at the moment, but he can't say it because it's something weird, it's too vulnerable or too, it's kind of like, and maybe he thinks like, if I say that to him, he's going to get complacent and he just wants the best for you. So
this is a bit sad. So I'm just,
it's okay to be a bit sad. It's fine.
But one of the last conversations I had with my dad, and it was like, because, you know, like I said, my dad was a proper hedonist, proper got on the drink and all that. He came to see me at Comedia. This is not the time when Jeff Innocent was much later on. And he got drunk and I was giving him a lift home. And he sat at the back. He came on his own and just had like a massive pitcher of lager and just got drunk and like loved it. And Julian Dean was on, I think, and he was like telling Julian Dean how much he loved him and all of this. And then I remember walking back to the car with my dad, and for the first time ever, and listen, it's possible that my memories, you know, you distort memories to suit your narrative a little bit. But I remember my dad saying to me, and this is like a few weeks before he passed away, I remember dad saying to me, was I all right tonight? And I said, yeah, why? And he goes like, did I embarrass you? And I said, no, I said, you're hilarious. He was hilarious. Like, he was just hilarious and drunk and stuff. But I remember it's like one of the first times I ever remember my dad kind of being self-aware enough to ask me if he'd done something to embarrass me or let me down or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It really stuck with me. I remember it bumped me at the time because I just thought, I actually felt gutted that he felt like that. I just felt like you're my dad. Do you know what I mean? Do what you want. You know, like, you know, like,
yeah.
You shouldn't have to ask me if you embarrassed me. Like, you come out for a few drinks and you enjoyed some comedy. You're not beholden to me to behave yourself in a certain way. You know, I felt I was a bit sad for him, but
yeah,
you know, it just sticks out as one of the last conversations he and I ever had, you know?
Yeah. That's, well, you've struck a chord with me there. I didn't expect you to, but yeah, there is a weird thing where you're the dad who's the entertaining fun one and it's all this, but then underneath it, you think they're like us. It's insecure. Yeah, it's like hoping it's, you know, everyone's having a good time and I'm not being an idiot, no matter how much they don't mind acting on one. I'm going to have a sip of water after that, just so I want to unlock some, not going to choking up or anything. Definitely am. that was funny when I texted you going, don't worry, mate, I'm not going to make you cry. And then you nearly made me cry on my own fucking podcast. I can't even be okay with crying because I have inbuilt toxic masculinity.
Absolutely. I don't have that. Well, I do have that. I do have that thing about crying. But I remember, like, when my dad passed away, I didn't cry very much. I cried, like, you know, when it initially happened. At the funeral and stuff, I didn't cry at all. And then maybe 2 months later, I was doing a weekend in Birmingham at the Glee Comedy Club in Birmingham, like a really great comedy club. And I didn't even know any of the other comics. So I was spending a lot of time on my own that weekend. And Men in Black 3 had just come out, right? And I wanted to go...
I already know where this is going.
And I wanted to go watch... I just thought, I'm just going to go to the cinema on my own and watch Men in Black 3, right? So... I went to the cinema like on the Saturday afternoon, and I had just sat there with popcorn. The end of that film, spoiler alert, the end of that film, it sort of explains why K and J end up sort of being Men in Black together. And it's because his dad gets killed. He sees that and he wants to be, he'd always been a parental figure to him throughout everything, you know, been keeping an eye on him or whatever. Right. And I was sat in the cinema and I saw that. And I just fucking started bawling at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon in this cinema in Birmingham. And I don't know what other people thought, man. I mean, I don't, just families there just trying to enjoy Men in Black 3. And then there's this bloke on his own just sobbing his eyes out.
It's all right, it's all right, Spencer. Ignore the sad man. Ignore the sad man. Take a wide breath.
Oh, man, it was so mad. It was
God. That resonates as well. It's this weird thing. It's just, I wish you just cry at the correct, it's not crying when you should just means you're going to cry somewhere where you shouldn't.
Yeah. It's 100%.
That sounded more profound than I meant, but I think that's accurate. But before, mate, cause you got to shoot in a set before we do then. Yeah. I was going to say, so when you get good news, obviously your mum's still with us. So when you get it, do you tell her quite early? Like, let's see, you get to host the League of Their Own or something. You call her up and go, oh, Mum, I got this. And then is she one of the first people, obviously your wife, you're going to tell, I hope, early. Do you give her that call and like kind of, do you care what she thinks still? Or do you like...
Do you know what? This sounds like I'm making it up, but I promise you, this is how I feel about this. I don't feel like I'm looking for my mum's approval. Like my mum is like, she's been so supportive and like my mum is one of my heroes. Like the stuff that she went through with my dad and to bring up my brother and I, she's one of like, I don't feel any doubts about what she thinks of me. She's brought me up in a way that I am 100% confident in her love and support for me. But I do tell my mum almost before I tell anyone else. And that's because I know that she will buzz her tits off about it. You know, like she just, I don't tell her because I want to hear her be, I tell her because I know she's going to be so delighted. You know, she just, sometimes I tell her stuff like, for example, hosting League of Their Own is a really good one, right? Because when I told my mum I was hosting League of Their Own, she got giddy. You know, she got great. Like, you know, she was like buzzing. So, oh my God, I can't believe my son is hosting. So you're hosting. You know, like she's so like excited. And it wasn't, and I remember.
Not because she hates James Corden.
No, yeah, well that's, you know, that's, I would say that's 65% of it. No. she was just so happy. And I felt like my motivation to tell her is because I knew it would make her happy rather than I wanted her to be proud of me. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's a slightly different feeling, but
I think that's good. I think that's good. That's a good, strong distinction to have, and a healthier motivation, I think.
Yeah.
You want to bring joy to your mum. And then, all right, then before we go, if your mum's, would your mum listen to a podcast? Does she listen to podcasts?
If she knew how to, she would. Yeah, like if I said to her, I've just done this podcast about my parents with you, she would ask me how to do it. That would take, how to listen to it. That would take, I would rough estimate.
So you're never going to tell her about it because it's going to take up an afternoon.
That would take about 3.5 to 4 hours to get her fully ready to listen to that podcast. But yeah.
But if she was in imaginary land listening to this, what would you like to say anything to her?
I would say to her, I would just like to say to her, thank you so much. You have done more for me than anybody else ever. And please don't tell Lisa I said that.
That was going to be so heartfelt, and you just couldn't help. You couldn't help but put a punch on it. But I like that. I'm the same. Don't worry.
It's just so tragic, isn't it?
It's very earnest. It's hard to be that earnest as a comedian. But I appreciate you almost getting there. And then to finish off, my dad, I'm playing in these bits. Everyone's kind of giving my dad a bit of advice or a little couple of words on anything to say to him, to encourage him to say I love you to me.
Listen, John, I don't know. I don't know if what I'm saying to you is going to mean anything, mate. But let me just tell you something. I promise you, if you turn to Chris, and I know Chris very well, he is one of the nicest, best-hearted people I know, right? If you say to Chris, your son, I love you, I promise you, you'll have broken the I love you barrier and you'll want to say it to him all the time. And you'll end up saying it to him so much, he'll start to get irritated about it and he'll do a separate podcast about asking people about parents who show too much emotion.
So, getting my dad to back off.
So listen, John, what I'm saying to you is please heed my words. Turn to your son, Chris, and say, I love you. You will feel forever better about having done so.
Oh, what a way to end. And before we end fully, mate, I appreciate that. I'll play that to my dad and get his reaction. Before I do that, anything you want to plug? You've got about 50 things, but anything specific you want people to check out?
You can check out the my podcast that I'm doing with Tom Davis called The Wolf and Owl. And it's just me and Tom with zero preparation talking for an hour once or twice a week, depending on how frequently we get the time.
He's a funny human. That would be it. Is that already out?
It's already out, mate. Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
I'll give it a listen.
Completely directionless.
Mate.
So enjoy.
Mate, the best time for podcasts rather than this structured shit I just did for an hour. Mate, I love you, Rom. Thanks for doing it, man. I
love you too, mate.
Heed my words. Turn to your son, Chris, and say I love you.
So, Dad, that was Ramesh with his bit of advice. What do you think of it?
Interesting. I probably need to think about it a bit, don't I?
What?
I mean, it's quite difficult for someone of my sort of generation to sort of be quite so explicit. I mean, he seemed to be very forthright in his approach. So I've probably got to go away and give it some sort of consideration, thought.
Just say it. Mean, he just said start saying it. Why don't you say it? He says it to his mum quite regularly.
Good. I mean, yeah, that's good. I mean, it may come more naturally to him than it does to me. I'm not sure.
All right.
So I'd probably have to look him up and sort of see.
Oh my god! Why do you have to? You have to research saying I love you.
You know, it takes thought. But I was quite interested in that thing, as I mentioned in the earlier sort of ramble I did. Accused of rambling, but, you know, even the most stuck-up person like Prince Charles can be quite sort of giving in the love department.
Right.
Yeah, this is a fantastic photograph. You should look at it. I mean, I don't know if he said it.
Stop going on about Prince Charles. I don't
care.
All right,
okay, sorry. I don't care about Prince Charles. I just thought it was a good example.
All right, well, do you know what this is, Dad? This is called deflection. You're deflecting to Prince Charles because you don't want to say I love you, which is fine. This is the first episode. I've got other people I'm interviewing. Maybe they'll break down those barriers. So why don't you help with the outro now?
It was a great effort, Christopher, and I think it's an interesting thing to do, and I hope that I can participate in other ones. So come back and hear me again.
There we go. All right. There we go.
Is that all
That's
right?
That's great. That'll do. That'll do. If you like the podcast, give us a rating online. We can work around that. That's my dad. Getting my dad to say anything I want him to say should be the name of the podcast.
Well, I'll say come back and see the next episode.
There we go. He smashed it.
So,
all right,
so I'm very happy. Yeah, I think we bring me back in the next episode. Yeah.
Great. And this is where you stop talking. Thanks, Dad. I love you.
Thank you, Christopher.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.